my whole frame on psychedelics is these are a skill, right? So just like we can learn to write, just like we can learn to cook, just like we can learn to do jujitsu, just like we can learn to play an instrument, we can also learn how to use psychedelics. And that means that there's going to be some period of time where it feels uncomfortable, or we have to have a teacher or a guide or a mentor or someone who can help us navigate some of the turbulent waters that might come up as we're learning a skill. It also means that you should try to go way past your skill set right away. If you've just started to learn how to cook and you try to cook a 5-course meal for a group of food writers, you're going to be fucked because you won't know what you're doing. So I think that also speaks to, like, with psychedelics, start with microdosing, start with LSD and psilocybin. If you're doing higher doses, start with ketamine or MDMA. And then eventually, you know, like, you can start to open up and explore what ayahuasca looks like, what wachuma looks like, what 5-MeO looks like. And remember that microdosing is a great starting point, and this book is a great starting point for microdosing.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. I'm excited today. And why am I excited? Well, I have a guest that is a very good friend of mine. Look, if you Google microdosing, one of the first hits that you will get will probably contain something about Paul Austin. So back in 2017, when microdosing was nowhere in the public consciousness, Rolling Stone wrote an article about Paul, and now he has literally wrote the book on microdosing. He's a great friend of mine, and I'm super excited to have him on and congratulate him about the new book. It's called Mastering Microdosing, and it is the practical guide to learning what microdosing is all about. So I'm super excited to have Paul on the show today. We're going to learn a lot about what microdosing is. We're going to get some history about Paul, and we're going to have a good time, which is always important. So who out there in the podcast listening world would love to hear all about Paul Austin? Good to see you, Paul. So back in 2017, you had an article written about you in Rolling Stone. And so if anyone were to Google microdosing as long as a year ago, you'd be one of the first hits that came up. Did you know that?
I love the SEO is my fucking shit, bro. I love that. I love being up there.
Hell yeah, you're up there. But not anymore, because microdosing has taken on a whole new life. Like, now when you go on microdosing, there's hundreds and hundreds of studies. So I'm glad to have you here, brother. And like I said, dear friend of mine, I want to just jump in. How did you first discover psychedelics?
Okay. So at the age of 16,
yeah,
I'm living in West Michigan. That's where I grew up, in a pretty sheltered family, quite religious, not conservative, but definitely traditional. A lot of rules. And one of the rules was, don't ever smoke weed. I'm 16, quite rebellious. And, you know, I smoked weed with some friends. My parents found out about it.
Yeah.
And my dad, who's like the sweetest, kindest guy you'll ever meet, tells me that, you know, we're sitting down, it's Sunday after church, and he's like, you know, this is the most disappointed I've been since my brother died in a car accident. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I remember like being like storming out of my house, going outside. It was like a cold late October day in Michigan, a little rain, kind of overcast, just being so upset and angry. And through that experience, you know, I came to realize that, oh, my parents are not infallible. Cannabis is not dangerous. Why is this illegal? And I can't really do what I want to do because culturally in the community that I'm growing up, all this stuff is so stigmatized. Even who I am feels so stigmatized. You know, I played the violin, I played soccer, I was smart. So I got made fun of by the football players and, you know, like those tough guys. So I was always just raised in an environment where I just felt like I'm the black sheep. I can't win. Like the things that I do aren't so great. And it wasn't until I did acid at the age of 19 that I actually was able to come to terms with that, that I felt like, oh, the issue is not me. The issue is the culture that I grew up in. And by working with acid, I did like a high dose, 250 mics. I was 19 at the time. By doing that high dose of acid, I was free from all of that judgment and all of that shame and all of that guilt that I'd sort of taken on being raised in that environment. And through that freedom then, I had this capacity finally to go, well, if I could do anything, what is it that I would do? What is it that I would want to create? And what I came back with, at least for my 20s, was travel, entrepreneur, live unconventionally, and just don't pursue things to get paid. Don't pursue things for a paycheck. Don't pursue things for money because it's artificial and superficial. Instead, find some deeper purpose that really calls to you and go do that. You know, go pursue that. And acid put me on that train. It really helped me to come to terms and start my personal development journey. I started meditating. I started eating healthier. I started, you know, being more sort of open and extroverted and connected. And then, you know, I moved to Turkey when I'm 21. I taught English abroad. At the age of 24, moved to Thailand, Chiang Mai, to start my first business and heard about microdosing. This is 2015. And I thought, you know, I bet microdosing is a way to elongate that afterglow. So after we do a high dose of acid or mushrooms or ayahuasca, we, for the next week or two or 3 weeks, we're more connected, we're more present, we meditate more often, we eat healthier, we're more loving, we're more empathic. You know, we've all experienced this. And then naturally, like, the juju kind of dissipates and goes away. And so I thought with microdosing, I think we can elongate that afterglow to make it even easier to show up present and attuned and loving and compassionate. And so I microdosed twice a week for 7 months in 2015, was really astounded by the significance of it, the impact of it. And that's when I started Third Wave. The platform was because I was like, if I could dedicate my life to one thing, it would be to normalize psychedelic use for healing and transformation. That I think this is one of the biggest levers that we can pull as a culture to shift our consciousness to deal with all these crises that we're facing. And so I was just like full on that, and I'm not going to stop till these things are legalized. That was sort of the focus.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like psychedelics themselves is what unlocked your life's journey. It sort of opened up things for you to be able to understand sort of what comes next.
Well, there's
for you. Does that sound
accurate?
There's
this polarity that I love to bring up when we talk about psychedelics, which is godhood versus victimhood. Are we choosing to be creators of our own reality? Or are we choosing to blame external circumstances and be at the whim of what's happening to us? Right. And that's not to say all of life is one or the other. There's a thousand shades of gray in between that. But what psychedelics do is they remind us of our godhood. They remind us of that spark of divinity that is within us. And they remind us that we are capable of anything that we orient towards. And so when I had and it wasn't just one acid trip. I did acid like 15 times, you know, in college probably, to anywhere from 100 micrograms to 300 micrograms. And the lessons and learnings that just kept coming up was, okay, I am interconnected with everything around me. Because I am interconnected with everything around me, it is imperative that I not only take care of myself, but I take care of my community, the earth, the other things around me, because my well-being is dependent on that. And if more and more people did this, I think we would fundamentally have a better world that we lived in. And that the reason people aren't into this is simply it's stigma. It's a lack of education. You know, I love history. I studied history in undergrad. I read and love history. And history has this sort of way of repeating itself. And so I, you know, when I started to get into psychedelics, I was like, well, like, are these new? Like, have we been doing this? Well, holy shit, we've been doing this 12,000 years. And then I found out, wow, the birth of religion probably came from psychedelic substances. And then I found out that Plato and Aristotle used psychedelics in ancient Greece, and that psychedelics were responsible for one of the fundamental aspects of Western philosophy, which is the sense of the body and soul are actually separate, that the soul is immanent, the soul is eternal, and the body dies, right? Plato came... He came to understand that through the Eleusinian Mysteries, where they drank Kaikion, which is very close to LSD. So it feels like these plants, these medicines have been crucial allies in the evolution of consciousness and the evolution of humanity. And when we are cut off from them, we all suffer for the worse.
Yeah. Well, what it sounds like is that you're bringing philosophy, religion, enlightenment, and sort of having them converge through what you see is the psychedelic journey, which is fascinating. For those people that haven't yet experimented or haven't yet experienced, I should say, psychedelics, when did the shift come for you? Was it immediately, you know, when you were, you said 19 and you had your first psychedelic trip, did you immediately know that this is a conscious, expanding, almost religious experience? Or was that something that happened over time as you were starting to get to know the psychedelics and get to know yourself a little bit better? Because you were doing this while you were growing up, right? So it was very much parallel with learning in general.
It's a great question, Alex. So as I mentioned before, I grew up religious, you know, and not, again, not fundamentalist, but church every Sunday for 3 or 4 hours, right? I went on mission trips in the summer. You know, I was a practicing Christian and all of that. And yet, my best friend in high school was an atheist from like the age of 12, which was in my community totally unheard of. Nobody was an atheist. That was like what the fuck? Who would do that? So I always had these interesting conversations with him. And so at the age of 18, I start reading Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris, all of whom are quite atheist and very against organized religion of any kind. And so I naturally then, you know, by the age of 18, 19, I was going to university and really exploring my own thing. And then I more or less became an atheist. I was like, oh yeah, okay, Christianity is ridiculous. These are clearly just a bunch of made up stories. And I, you know, I was very rebellious at that age. So I was just like, I don't want to do anything my parents are doing. And what happened when I started to work with LSD and acid is I would have what I would now consider to be these mystical experiences, but at that point in time, they just felt very healing and very loving and very connected. And I didn't necessarily have a vocabulary or a language to contextualize these experiences. And I could just feel the dramatic shift in my mental health, you know, and the level of shame and guilt that I felt. It just was all released. And so as a result of doing LSD and acid, I read one book in particular, which your listeners may be interested in if they are readers. It's called The Perennial Philosophy by Aldous Huxley. So Aldous Huxley, you know, most famous mm-hmm. for writing The Brave New World, brilliant, one of the most brilliant writers of the 20th century. And towards the end of his life, he started to get into psychedelics, LSD and mescaline in particular. And just before he got into psychedelics, he was very into Vedantic philosophy, the Vedantas, like the Upanishads and whatnot. And he wrote this book right around the time of World War II. You know, World War II, it's like the whole world is at war. It's this time. I mean, we think it's divisive now. Imagine how divisive it was, Germany versus France versus Japan. Like, it's just everyone is going at it. And so Huxley was trying to make sense of this and go, actually, we have way more in common than we do different. And so he wrote this beautiful book about what do all the major world religions share in common? You know, what is Islam have in common with Christianity, have in common with Judaism, have in common with Buddhism, have in common with Hinduism? And what he landed on is the mystical elements of these religions. So Sufism and Islam, the Quakers, he used an example in Christianity, but he also used Meister Eckhart. He would talk about, you know, the Kabbalah and Judaism that way. Buddhists and Hindus are more in touch with that already. But these mystical elements always share a common theme, which is a fundamental belief in a source of all being, what he calls the immanent ground. And that source of all being, whether you call it God or source or the universe, is holding, it envelops life and it provides life. And that when we work with psychedelics and also when we do meditation and, you know, do these other, we can actually access that state of non-duality, that state of going beyond light and dark, good and bad, up and down. And when we're able to sort of pierce that veil and experience source energy, there's this unconditional love that moves through that. And that unconditional love is what people then find. It's what I experienced when I first did it. I'm sure you've experienced this in the throes of your own work. And it's that unconditional love that I think is the core of all of the healing in psychedelics. Because as kids, when we're raised by parents, none of us are loved unconditionally. unconditional love, it isn't possible for a human to provide unconditional love because we are so imperfect. Only God can do that. And so that felt experience, that gnosis, right, led to so many shifts then in how I perceive myself, how I perceive reality, how I perceive the world. And what's interesting, I'll just kind of add one note to this, is as psychedelics have become more popular over the last several years, there are a lot of people who they don't have any prior context for religion or God. You know, they were raised in maybe an atheist household or raised in a very reductionist, sort of overly intellectual household. And a lot of these folks, when they first do psychedelics, they have psychotic breaks because the concept that God exists is just so foreign to them that they can't grok it, they can't hold it. And so I think that's one of the biggest sort of missions of my life and our time is how do we help people remember that there is a thing before life and a thing after life? Because seeing through the veil of death and the illusion of death is central to the healing that psychedelics provide. We just went there, brother. I thought we were talking about microdosing.
No, we're diving
about microdosing, and now we're getting.
Yeah, we will. Dude, we're going to go around the world, and then we're going to get right there. Look, what you just described sounds like you just sort of deconstructed a bad acid trip, uh-huh. Right? I mean, right? I mean, for those that have heard about bad acid trips, I know early on that was one of the things that was blocking me from even wanting to experiment with acid because of just everything that was happening in sort of the public conscious or with the war on drugs and everything that now we realize was misguided energy, right? At the time, all it was doing was creating that stigma. So if we go to 2015, you know, when you first started microdosing, we'll get back to microdosing. When you go there, right? Is this around the time when you were forming the third wave?
So I started microdosing March 2015, July 2015, I came up with the idea. September 2015 is when I started Third Wave. So microdosing was really like I had this experience. I was kind of looking at the contextual history around psychedelics. Why did these become illegal in the first place? What is the actual scientific research that supports the illegality? And then, you know, I studied a lot of social. How do you create social movements? How do you get people to do things? Basically, persuasion, right? And yeah. One of the core fundamentals of persuasion comes from this book, Influence by Robert Cialdini, is you get people to take a small step before they take a big step. And so my fundamental belief was mystical experiences through intentional psychedelic use will catalyze transformation in our collective consciousness. And yet, not every single person is ready to jump in the deep end. And so to bridge that gap, there needs to be a more accessible way to start to work with psychedelic substances that isn't necessarily totally dissolving your ego and eating 10 grams of mushrooms. And so when I microdosed, the light clicked and I thought, okay, if we're going to build out this platform and educate people and basically like create a cultural reformation, for lack of a better word. I don't like the word revolution just because I don't think revolutions are always that healthy, but a reformation. Then... Right. We have to figure out a way where people can engage with this in the comfort of their own home and start to build a relationship with it. And so that's when I landed on microdosing, because microdosing, you can take a tiny bit and then you can take a tiny bit more and then you can take a tiny bit more and you can actually start to calibrate how you feel with it without having to totally, you know, without risking a bad acid trip per se, because there's a lot of people in the 60s, you know, who took a fuck ton of acid. And it's traumatic. Yeah. It can be traumatic in that way. And so the fear that you and I both have experienced probably even before working with psychedelics, but even I've been doing psychedelics for 12 years and I still get even a little now. Like, all right, am I really about to do this shit? You know, it's a healthy fear.
Yeah, man.
And it also speaks to everything we talked about in the training program that you went through and, you know, what we teach at Third Wave. It's like, that is why it's so important that we're intentional, that we prepare, that we integrate, that we pay attention to set and setting, right? There's a lot of contextual elements that need to be honored if we're going to work with these high doses of psychedelics. Microdosing to some degree, yes, but that's also the beauty about microdosing is you don't need to be as worried about, oh, every little thing has to be perfect. You can just take a little bit and see how you feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's more accessible, and it's something like, as you said, it's the public consciousness at this point is used to taking vitamins and used to, you know, putting together different ways to be able to enhance someone's performance or someone's, you know, brain activity to start to put nootropics in. So this really marries well into that. So going back to, and now I want to jump into the book, Mastering Microdosing. I went through it. I think it is extremely pragmatic. It's really pointing out exactly what you're talking about here. And I didn't realize that microdosing itself was part of, I may call it the inspiration of Third Wave, right? And so now you've written a book, very practical, in my opinion, also gives context around microdosing. So tell me, who is this book for, and how can they benefit?
It's a great question. Yeah, I mean, even broader, like, who is microdosing for? Right?
Yeah, right.
And usually what I say is everyone, with a few exceptions, of course. With a few exceptions. I'm not that guy. But, you know, those who are predisposed to schizophrenia or have schizophrenia should not microdose. Those who have personality disorders should be very careful of microdosing. There's a certain, you know, 5 to 10% of the population who's just non-responsive to psychedelics generally. So microdosing won't work for them. But besides that, I think almost everyone, my thesis is that almost every person could benefit from microdosing, just like I believe almost every person could benefit from taking vitamin D or could benefit from taking fish oil or could benefit from going for a walk. I see microdosing as a supplement. I see it as a medicine. Mm-hmm. And I see it as something that can both help heal and also help with performance. So what this book covers, so the title of it is Mastering Microdosing. The subtitle is How to Use Subperceptual Psychedelics to Heal Trauma, Improve Performance, and Transform Your Life, right? And so, you know, there are college kids who are not interested in Adderall and Ritalin, but still want to help, you know, want to study and have more focus that way, microdosing could potentially be very beneficial for them. There are entrepreneurs who are running $100 million companies and are sick of sort of the neuroticism that comes from modafinil and are looking to microdosing to help with that. There are product engineers, software engineers who are looking to spend more time in flow and microdosing can help with that. There are moms, soccer moms, who maybe have been on antidepressants like Prozac or Zoloft and are seeing how numbed out they are and how much microdosing could potentially help them to get off of antidepressants and be more present for their kids and be more loving for their kids. There are people who are in their 70s or 80s who are sort of towards the tail end of life who are noticing cognitive decline and have recognized that microdosing could help with that cognitive decline. So I really think this book is for everyone. Now, if there are listeners here who have been microdosing for years, I think they'll most benefit from probably the last few chapters that go deep into some of the science, some of the usefulness for flow, some of the usefulness for leadership, but also a lot of the fundamentals that I talk about in terms of the structure, in terms of the protocols, in terms of the different dose levels, in terms of what to combine it with, the lifestyle practices. I've really done my best to contextualize a ton of content and information into this book as a useful, not only starting point, but also what the title itself suggests, mastering microdosing. How do you master this as a protocol, as a tool, as a modality to be able to heal, perform, and transform. And what this speaks to, Alex, is, and I know you're very familiar with this from our training program, but my whole frame on psychedelics is these are a skill, right? So just like we can learn to write, just like we can learn to cook, just like we can learn to do jujitsu, just like we can learn to play an instrument, we can also learn how to use psychedelics. And that means that there's going to be some period of time where it feels uncomfortable or we have to have a teacher or a guide or a mentor or someone who can help us navigate some of the turbulent waters that might come up as we're learning a skill. It also means that you should try to go way past your skill set right away. If you've just started to learn how to cook and you try to cook a 5-course meal for a group of food writers, you're going to be fucked because you won't know what you're doing. So I think that also speaks to, like, with psychedelics, start with microdosing, start with LSD and psilocybin. If you're doing higher doses, start with ketamine or MDMA. And then eventually, you know, like, you can start to open up and explore what ayahuasca looks like, what wachuma looks like, what 5-MeO looks like. And remember that microdosing is a great starting point. And this book is a great starting point for microdosing. And it's very organized and, like, you can pick a chapter or two at a time. You can read the entire book if you want. What I want people most to come away with is feeling like they are confident in that they know how to navigate a microdosing protocol if they're just getting going, or even if it's their fourth or fifth time doing.
Yeah. So what would you say, someone who has never microdosed, never tried psychedelics before?
Yeah.
They pick up your book, right? They start to look through some protocols. They can't necessarily go to the local CVS or the local vitamin store and grab, you know, any
not
sort
yet.
Of microdose.
Not at the time of this yet. Publication. Not at the time of this publication.
Right. Coming soon.
Yeah, coming soon.
So where does someone start aside from getting your book? There's so many protocols out there, right? You know, point them in the right direction. They can go to Amazon. They can get your book. They got it. They're reading it. Now what?
So there's a couple questions, right? There's a couple challenges. One is, of course, the obvious one, which is how do you get the substance itself, right? Which is
right.
A clear challenge for a lot of people. The second one, though, is once you have the substance, do you have a coach? Do you have a therapist? Do you do this by yourself? You know, how much do you take?
Right.
How often do you do it? And I'll address both of those because I think those would just be helpful fodder for the conversation. So first and foremost, sourcing substances. Disclaimer, most psychedelics are illegal in most places. Right. There's a couple exceptions to that. In the Netherlands, you know, psilocybin truffles are legal. In Jamaica, psilocybin is legal. But in most places, psilocybin and LSD, which are the two most common psychedelics people microdose with, are illegal. With that said, they are the lowest priority for law enforcement, and very few people get arrested or get in trouble for personal use of psychedelics. Selling it is a whole different matter, which we won't get into here, but personal use of psychedelics there's not necessarily much at all. Much, if any, of law enforcement going after that. So in terms of sourcing, what I tell people first and foremost is through Third Wave, we have a mushroom grow kit. So we've made it as easy as possible for you to grow your own mushrooms. You can go on Third Wave, you can go to our mushroom grow kit, you can buy it, it'll come to your home. It's everything you need except the spores to grow mushrooms. We can't sell the spores with the grow kit as that would be illegal, but we have blogs and resources on our website that we have recommended vendors for you to find spores. So we basically make it as easy as possible for you to grow your own mushrooms, to grow your own medicine, which I always emphasize as priority number one, because if you can control that and own that, then it's like, you know, it's like the classic proverb, teach a man how to, give a man a fish, whatever. Teach him how to catch a fish and he can eat forever. Give a man a fish, he can eat for a day.
Something like that.
Teach a man how to catch a fish, he can eat forever, whatever. And I think that's also true with these medicines, is grow your own medicine and you will never have a lack of medicine to use. And you'll be fully reliant on yourself for that, which I think is super powerful. Second to that, I think, is community. And, you know, in most cities, in most major metropolitan areas now in the United States and in Canada, there are psychedelic societies that are popping up that you can find often on Meetup. So if someone's living in Asheville or Salt Lake City or Spokane or San Diego or New York or Raleigh or Miami, whatever. Google your city psychedelic society or your closest nearest urban city. And there's likely going to be a group of people who are meeting up maybe on a monthly basis to have conversation, discussions, events around psychedelics. So that's always the second part that I emphasize, is go meet other people, right? Timothy Leary had this phrase, find the others. Because psychedelics are quite underground and stigmatized, it can be difficult sometimes to find the others. But that's what we have to do. We have to find the others and create community. And so I think that is oftentimes, first, grow your own medicine. You'll always have it. Second, go find community. And from that, there will be relationships that naturally emerge, which will make it quite easy to find medicine. Now, what I will strongly advise against is going to those meetups and explicitly asking people, hey, can you give me some acid? Because that tends to turn people off. So being mindful of the organic nature of how relationships grow, investing in those, and naturally what will emerge from that is a capacity to source these medicines. Now, I think on the second question, protocols, starting points, calibration, the amount. So the classic microdose is about a tenth of a regular dose. So for LSD, that's anywhere from 5 to 20 micrograms. For psilocybin, that's anywhere from 50 to, let's say, 200 or 250 milligrams. Mm. What I always teach is start low and go slow. You can always take more. You can't necessarily take less. So it's better to err on the side of taking too little, and you can always sort of add more as you go along. The key with microdosing is we're doing it two or three times a week for a period of 30 to 60 days. So we're not necessarily taking a microdose and expecting instant transformation. Instead, it's more like meditation, where with meditation, you're like, I'm going to meditate every day for 30 days, and I'm going to notice how my disposition and mood changes from day one to day 30, not from day one to day two. So microdosing is much the same. We're really looking at from day one to day 30 or day one to day 60, how is my mood, my disposition, my energy, my cognition changing as a result of microdosing two or three times a week. And then I think beyond that, right? So start low and go slow. Do it for an extended period of time, two or three times a week. The other thing then is find a coach or a therapist or even a friend who can support you. Someone who has done this before. So this is why we have our coach training program through Third Wave, is we're helping to train coaches to support people as they move through high dose, journey dose, microdoses, other practices as well. And have an intention, have a goal, have an outcome that you're looking for. Don't just sort of microdose and see what happens. Instead, go in and say, how can I microdose as a catalyst to meditate more often? You know, meditation is one of the stickiest habits, or one of the most difficult habits to create stickiness around. And I know so many people who have found incredible success by utilizing microdosing as a catalyst to integrate a new behavior like meditation. I use microdosing to cut alcohol, to stop drinking, which a lot of people also are looking into, you know, to help with. So I think have a clear goal. Don't look at microdosing as a magic pill, right? Don't think, oh, I'm going to microdose and it's going to fix all my problems. No, only you can fix your problems, right? Only you have that capacity. Microdosing will make you more capable of doing that. And it's still up to you. You still have to own it. You still have to want it. You still have to have that choice and that decision to make it happen. And microdosing will just facilitate that process for you.
Yeah. The intention piece is something else. And I want to add, so I'm somebody who, ever since the pandemic, I've been extremely consistent around my meditation. So I practice TM twice a day. And when I started to microdose, and for those of you who are out there, my first microdosing protocol was with Paul a few years ago. So I actually took this course, and I could, I could definitely vouch for it. But when I started to regularly microdose, I started to see my meditations became deeper. I could sit in meditation for longer. It became a bit stickier. My yoga started to really bring together my body and spirit and mind. And it felt more organic and natural. It's really hard to describe it. I mean, I guess I sort of am right now, but that's where I see microdosing not only helps to make the routines you have or the intentions that you have actually stick, but if you currently have routines, if you currently are in a practice, they deepen that practice. They add like a bit of richness to that practice. And I experienced that myself. So I want to cover a couple of things around microdosing, which I find interesting. In the book, you say you have transformation and you have improvement, performance improvement in the subtitle. And you also have healing trauma. Now, there are loads of supplements out there that'll tell you that they'll improve your performance, they'll transform this and that, right? That's something you hear all around, right? But the healing trauma piece isn't something that you necessarily get from your average ordinary over-the-counter supplement, right? So what's your personal experience as far as healing from trauma with microdosing? And how does microdosing support that process for those that are out there potentially going through something?
That's a great question, Alex. So as context for this, there's a way to work with, there's really two fundamental ways to work with psychedelics. One is called psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, which is a very high dose of a psychedelic with therapeutic support before and after. So for anyone who's following sort of the MDMA clinical trials or the psilocybin clinical trials or the FDA, they're using psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. It's two or three very high dose experiences supported by a therapist before and after. There's also something called psycholytic psychedelic therapy. Psycholytic psychedelic therapy, there was a lot of research done in the 60s on this, not as much this time around. It's taking low doses of psychedelics, two or three times a week, throughout an entire therapeutic container. So 6 months, let's say. And the difference is high doses is like someone's shaking you to get the message. Right? It can be intense. It can be overwhelming. It can be very difficult. It can be incredibly profound. But there's a level of, there's a ton that's getting shaken up, right? A ton that's getting shaken up, which is why you don't do it that often, right? So in the psychedelic assisted psychotherapy models, they do it two or three times over 3 to 6 months. Whereas when we work with these lower doses, the microdoses, it's like someone's whispering at you to get the message. So it's just easier to take on. It's easier to integrate. It's easier to sort of, oh, that's what they're saying, and sort of go from there. Now, my own experience with microdosing within a therapeutic container, I've done about 6 months of therapy in my life. So I am very fortunate that a lot of my childhood trauma has to do with kind of like shame, and I would say being bullied more or less when I was like 10 or 11. I had relatively good upbringing. I had no major adverse childhood experiences. Neither of my parents were alcoholics or abused me or none of that. Like I was very fortunate in that way, very privileged. Never been on an antidepressant. I've never been on any sort of psychiatric medication. I've definitely struggled with depression and anxiety, but you know, that's just sort of the natural ups and downs that I went through in my 20s. And yet, when I was living in New York and the end of 2018, early 2019, and I was really struggling. And so I ended up seeing a therapist. And what happened, and sort of a lot of my challenges as a man and the way that I was raised is a lack of, you know, I'm not in touch with my emotions. So I just don't have the capacity to be as emotionally intelligent and communicate from that perspective. And when I was in therapy, what I noticed is I would take about 200 milligrams of psilocybin. I did therapy once a week. And so for every time I would do 200 milligrams of psilocybin, and it would just make it so much easier to access repressed emotion. I was able to cry easier. I was able to express anger easier. I was able to feel shame and guilt easier. And that the efficacy of psychedelics for healing comes through a process called catharsis, right? And so often we stuff our emotions, right? We repress our emotions. We suppress our emotions. And we can only heal them by releasing them, by letting them go, by having a catharsis. And so what psychedelics do, both high doses but also microdoses, is they allow this window of a catharsis where it just allows those emotions that are normally stuck in the subconscious and the unconscious to just open up, be aired, and come out. And through that process of opening that up and allowing them to come out, we can actually look at them. We can confront them and face them. And then through that confrontation, we can integrate them back into ourselves, right? Because so often these traumatic experiences that we go through, it often leads to what we could call a disassociated sense of self. Or in internal family system and parts work, it would be called an exiled self, right? And so a lot of healing trauma and healing these aspects is actually going, oh, I can welcome this part back in. I can heal the things that need to be healed, and it can actually be, it can be an ally rather than an enemy. So Jung would often say that there's gold in the shadow. And so the shadow are the parts of ourselves that we repress and that we suppress. And so when we open up that shadow material, that's where the sustenance comes from to actually do the work and to have motivation and to have energy. Now, on a more fundamental level, psilocybin and LSD are great for depression because they help increase energy and mood, right? They're serotonergic. LSD is also quite dopaminergic. So in terms of like from a biological perspective, LSD and psilocybin, they help with serotonin regulation. They help with an increase in dopamine. They help with energy and mood. And so they're really good for that. Also, when it comes to PTSD, these lower doses. So what happens when we take psychedelics is they dampen the fear response from the amygdala. So the amygdala is an almond-shaped thing that's in our brain and is really the center of our fear response. And so when we have PTSD, if something reminds us of that trauma, the amygdala really tightens up and it can't really respond. It's stuck in a fight or flight mode. And so what psychedelics do, even at lower doses, is they dampen that fear response. And so even if something traumatic happens, something triggering happens, when we're working with a psychedelic, we just aren't as reactive. We have that space to respond rather than react. And that spaciousness to choose our response makes a world of difference for those who struggle with PTSD.
Mm. Yeah. Are you now able to cry?
More and more. Yeah. I've always been more in touch with my emotions, I would say, than the average man. Like yeah. I am a bit more effeminate. But I would say more than ever, even nowadays, like I'm just becoming more and more sensitive. That's also partly because I've been dating now someone for the better part of a year. And right. But yeah, I feel like that capacity to allow for that emotion is it's so important.
Dude, good for you. Ever since I started, I don't know if it's psychedelics or what, it could be me getting older, but I cry like at anything at this point. I mean, I'm serious. I'm watching commercials on TV and I'm just bawling. Something about, something about a pet or something. And I just, it's over for me. I get that.
Maybe you microdosing too much. Well,
Yeah.
This is the other thing, right? Like
could be.
With microdosing, yeah. I noticed that when I take acid, a microdose of acid, I am more sensitive. Yeah. I'm more likely to be emotional. I'm more likely to cry. And sometimes it could be too much. And that's when I know I need to scale it back a little bit. So it's always a balance. It's always a dance, you know, but the underlying thing is that catharsis, right? Allowing for that release of suppressed emotion is central to healing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So a couple more questions and we only got a few more minutes left. So I want to make sure they're succinct.
Okay.
So we referenced earlier the coaching certification program that I took through Third Wave and I was in the first cohort. What's important about working with a certified professional when it comes to psychedelic, either microdosing or anything related into psychedelic therapy? What's important about that?
Well, it's a bit of a wild west out there right now because it's still largely illegal. Yeah. It's not really regulated. There's no governing sort of central body. And yet Oregon and Colorado have legalized it. There are tons of states, tons of cities that have decriminalized it. But it's hard to tell fact from fiction sometimes. And so through Third Wave, we've built up a very credible, trustworthy brand. And so we are now training and certifying these coaches. So that way we can go out to our audience and say, hey, if you're looking to work with someone that you can trust, someone who knows what they're doing, someone who can help you prepare, can help you integrate, can help you find the right place for you, a retreat or clinic, whatever it is, let us help you do that. You know, and so we do a 6-month training, which you participated in the inaugural cohort with a retreat. And it's really to train executive coaches, wellness coaches, performance coaches, life coaches, but also therapists, clinicians, you know, really in that, what I call the skill of psychedelics.
Yeah. And so I'll also add that those of you who are out there that are in the coaching profession already and are interested in synthesizing psychedelics into your practice, I highly recommend it. Our particular cohort had quite a few practicing coaches, consultants, and others that are now, you know, bringing it into their practice. I'm doing the same. And those of you who are interested in doing that know that I've received almost a dozen clients so far.
Wow.
From, you know, just, yeah. So we'll, that's yeah, phenomenal. We can talk about that later, but
we haven't caught up in a while. I think I want to hear more about this, Alex.
Yeah. Well, that says something about, thank you. That says something about what's happening right now in terms of the interest in psychedelics and how, as you mentioned before, the cross-section of people that are now open or interested or even curious is wide. And so I get, you know, look, I'm one of the few that's in the Orlando area, in the Washington, D.C. area. And so I get, you know, calls and it hits on my website. Hey, we're interested, you know, I'm interested. I want to learn more. So it's a very exciting place to be. And I guess go ahead.
Well, I would say in any coach I hear, as coaches, I'm a coach myself, as practitioners, we're always looking for cutting edge. We're always looking for what can help us be a better coach, what can help our clients get faster results. And without a doubt, psychedelics, I think, are if not the best tool to facilitate that. And because they are so potent, you have to work with them skillfully. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know the context. You have to make sure there's good information, right? And so that's really the core of the training is here's why they're so useful and here's how you can make sure they are incredibly useful for you and your client. So that's I think, further context for what we're talking about.
Yeah, perfect. So what's the one thing you wish people would take away from the book?
That we are all different.
Yeah.
And that a microdose for me is different than a microdose for you, which is different than a microdose for whoever's listening to this. And that the capacity to listen to our intuition, to listen to what it is that that it's working for us or is not working for us, is central to the role that psychedelics play, I think, and can open up. And that reading through this book, it's not prescriptive. It offers guidelines, suggestions, and frameworks. But at the end of the day, the only way to become a skillful practitioner, or even a skillful sort of person who is working with psychedelics, is to do it. And so crossing that threshold, microdosing makes it really easy to cross that threshold. And I think so if there's one thing to take away, it's you are unique and you are different. And this book will help you figure out what is the ideal way to navigate this landscape as you start to work with microdosing and psychedelic substances.
Beautiful. Beautiful. The name of the book is called Mastering Microdosing, How to Use Subperceptual Psychedelics to Heal Trauma, Improve Performance, and Transform Your Life. It's available on Amazon, wherever books are sold. Hey, question, are your parents, how do they feel about your like notoriety now in this, in psychedelics? Are you still getting like hurt at the dinner table during family gatherings?
It's interesting. You know, like when I first told my parents about it in 2014, they were very anti. And then I started Third Wave in 2015. And then I started a retreat center in the Netherlands in 2018. And then Michael Pollan's book came out in 2018. And now they're in full support. You know, a couple of my family members have tried it themselves. You know, they're clearly not as gung-ho as I am about it. But they're like, they get it. And they support it. And they recognize it. And none of the old sort of like, what are you doing? Your crazy energy is around anymore. There's actually a lot of like, Paul's clearly helping a lot of people through his work. And I think that makes
sense. No, I just was going to say, I think there's going to be a ayahuasca journey with Paul's parents.
That's happening.
2025.
Yeah. Oh, maybe 2024. I got my dad on board already. Just, my mom is the next one. So we gotta work on her too. Yeah.
Dude, I'm there. I'm there. Paul, this was an amazing, amazing, amazing interview with you. I learned so much about you that I didn't already know. Again, for those of you interested, Google Paul Austin and he will come up. Google microdosing. He might be on the second page this year, but that's okay. He is the expert. He literally wrote the book on microdosing. He's a really, really great friend of mine. Thank you so much. Continued success. Onward and upward.
Thank you, Alex. This was an honor and a pleasure. And I can't wait to turn it around and have you on our podcast to go into all these things. It's been fun. It's been a ton of fun.
I got a lot to say, man. I started. Yeah, brother. I have two startups that are extremely successful based on microdosing, but that's for another show.
My gosh.
We'll talk about
all right,
that.
Well,
later.
We got a lot to catch up on. That's phenomenal. Congrats.
Yes, we do, my brother. Thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
And we will talk soon.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.